three relatively straightforward bills. Deborah, you're the star of the show today. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 173. Chris.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 173 allows the Department of Revenue to disclose confidential information from tax returns to cities, counties, and other political subdivisions of other states, or an association established exclusively to provide services to federal, state, or local taxing authorities. The use of this information must be for tax administration and compliance purposes only. The entity must be governed by a provision of law that meets the requirements of the Internal Revenue Code pertaining to confidentiality. And this is expected to have a minimal revenue impact.
Anything else we should know or questions for Chris? Ms. Buchanan.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. I have provided some testimony for Senate Bill 173. On the second page of that, you will notice the states that currently participate in a uniform agreement developed by the Federation of Tax Administrators. Oregon, Nevada, and New Mexico are the states that are not participants in that agreement. What it does is allow the states to exchange confidential information. We currently can provide information to other states under Oregon law as long as they protect the confidentiality of the information. The problem we have run into is that there's a database that's operated by the Federation of Tax Administrators and then also another one by the Multi-State Tax Commission, and the city of New York is a participant in the database. So that means that if we provided information to the database, there's a possibility that the city of New York would be able to access it. Under the law as it exists, we can't disclose to cities or municipal governments. It's just states. So what would change with this is allow us to enter into those agreements that have local governments as participants. Also, I have provided, starting on page 3, the Uniform Exchange of Information Agreement that is in place now. And again, Oregon is not a participant in this. We do receive information from other states, and we can receive information from local governments and cities. It's just that we cannot then provide information to some of those entities. Yeah. I'd be happy to try to answer questions, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you. Questions for, yes, Senator Starr.
Thank you. I'm sure this is true, but just to get on the record, all of this tax information that's shared, is all of it is confidential.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, the law as it exists now requires that any receiving government have in place a confidentiality standards that meet those of the Internal Revenue Code. So, yes, they're required to maintain that as confidential. And even now, if we were to provide information to the state of New York, the state could not then share that with any other state or the city of New York. So they do have to maintain that as confidential.
Sometimes it's helpful just to on these, to have an example of Citizen X, or where maybe, well, I'll let you give it, but like Citizen X in Nevada had Oregon tax liability, or Nevada was somehow trying to get, can you, instead of me trying to drum up here an example and not do it very well?
Mr. Chairman, some of the examples that we have seen is a few years ago, there was an increase in abusive tax shelter activity. So businesses that were engaged in that, if one state did an audit and determined that there was an abusive activity going on, they could provide that information to the database. Other states would be able to access that information and perhaps look at what was going on in their state. Even with individuals, we did have a few years ago a situation where Montana determined that there was a fraudulent refund scheme going on in its state with multiple refund claims. They provided that information to a database for other states to look at to see whether perhaps there were individuals with same Social Security numbers, same addresses, that type of thing. So there was the sharing of information in that case, too.
Great. Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think that's it. Anyone else on Senate Bill 173? Close the public hearing and...
moving on down the road?
I would be happy to. Takes three to move down the road, and we've got three. Open a work session on Senate Bill 173. It's just amazing when you open a work session. You always get another.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 173 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr's moved Senate Bill 173 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. You know, comments. I think this will be good for everyone in Oregon except for probably Tigard and downtown Portland and that northwest area.
Bull Mountain especially.
But for the rest of Oregon, this will be a really great idea. Barbara, can you call the roll?
Mr. Chair, you cannot sway me. Senator Burdick votes aye.
Aye.
Senator
Starr.
Aye.
Excused.
And Chair Deckard.
Votes aye. Senate Bill 173, having the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Senator Burdick, would you be willing to carry this this excellent bill?
I would be thrilled, Mr. Chair.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 175. Chris.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 175 reduces the time period the Department of Revenue must wait before demanding a taxpayer file a tax report or return and imposing a failure to file penalty in cases where the report or return is required to be filed more often than once a year. The time period is reduced from 3 months to 1 month after the filing or payment due date. In cases where a taxpayer is required to file a federal income tax return for a period of less than 12 months, the current waiting period of 3 months is retained. The changes in this bill would apply to reports or returns required to be filed on or after January 1, 2008. And this is expected to have a minimal revenue impact on a variety of income tax, a variety of tax programs, income, tobacco, lodging, and transit, for example, and that's why the revenue impact shows a minimal amount for the general fund, other funds, and local governments.
Thank you. Questions for Chris? Ms. Buchanan.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Current Oregon law provides that when a person doesn't file a return or report that is required to be filed, the department can ask or demand that the return be filed. We do wait for 3 months after the due date of that report or return in order to make the demand. We must then also wait 2 months in addition to that in order to demand any payment that's determined to be due by the department. That is a good timeline. It works well for annual filings, your income tax return that you file every year. It's reasonable to wait 3 months if you haven't filed that and ask for that return. Where it doesn't work so well, and what Senate Bill 175 addresses, is when you have quarterly filings, for example, withholding reports or tobacco tax reports, transit reports, state lodging reports. Those are required to be filed every quarter. So if we're required to wait 3 months after the due date, we're already one quarter past the required filing quarter into the next one. Another 2 months puts us even further along. This would allow us to work with the taxpayer much earlier in the process to make sure that they're getting back in the system. Any problems are resolved before it gets so far along that they're unable to even make any kind of payment or filing.
Questions?
Sure.
Yes, Senator Monroe.
So instead of waiting 3 months, you would wait only 1 month?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, that's correct.
And then would they still have 2 months after that to actually make payment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe, I do believe that it shortens that time period as well. Page one of the bill provides for 30 days, and then on page... at the bottom of page one, we may determine the tax, assess the tax, and apply a penalty. So, I believe it shortens that time period, too, that it is not 2 months.
What is it?
It would be 30 days. So 1 month after the due date, we can demand, and then in sub B, within 30 days... So it's 1 month and then a 30-day period.
Okay. So it shortens it from 5 months to 2 months, essentially.
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, I believe so, but that's how I understand it.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you, Deborah. Only one question on that one, Deborah. Any other thoughts on, or anyone else want to testify on Senate Bill 175? Close public hearing. Look around.
Do it.
Keep looking.
Do it.
Open a public work session on 175. Senator Monroe.
Move Senate Bill 175 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Rod Monroe has moved Senate Bill 175 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Senator Monroe will carry that bill.
Okay.
He nodded.
Sure, why not?
Said, sure, why not? and I forgot. Paul Warner has brought us, I guess he's going to do this every day, perhaps, a quote of the day. You want to read it, Paul? Do you have a mic over there?
I don't have a mic. Oh,
so we can't ask you official questions? You don't have to. You do not have to for this. Okay, so here's Paul's quote from The Economist, very timely, January 27th, 2007. Whereas in Europe or Asia, new ideas often flow from the center to the regions, central government to the states. In America, the states are the incubators of big shifts in policy. The Economist, just what, 2 days ago. We are the innovators, according to The Economist, probably the standard for economic news in the world. The Economist.
Not shiftless.
Thanks for that. Not shiftless.
Of course, Mr. Chair, we all know what an economist is, right?
I haven't heard this one, no.
An economist is somebody that's very good with numbers, but doesn't have the personality to be an accountant.
Yeah. I have heard that one. I have heard that one.
And
the accountants, you stole their best joke when they come once every 2 years and do their report. That's their...
I heard it first from Joe Courtwright.
Oh.
We've heard them all, Mr. Chair.
That's a new variation on the accountant economist joke. Any other good jokes before we do the last fill of the morning here? Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 177.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 177 establishes a bright line test for determining whether or not a business has substantial nexus with Oregon for the purposes of the income or corporate excise tax. The bill effectively adopts a multi-state tax commission uniform provision. The provision defines the minimum thresholds for determining nexus as a business having at least $50,000 of property, $50,000 of payroll, $500,000 of sales, or at least 25% of total property, payroll, or sales in Oregon. These dollar amounts would be indexed to inflation, and the changes would apply to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2008. The revenue impact is expected to be minimal, less than $50,000 a year, but there would be both positive and negative effects. Currently, small businesses or businesses that do not meet the threshold would no longer be required to file a tax return, so that would be a loss in revenue. But there would be an increase in an expected increase in revenue from other corporations that would be expected to file with the bright line test, because it would make it clear in statute whether or not this existed and that the corporation was taxable in Oregon.
Great. Questions for Chris?
Chair.
Yes, Senator Monroe.
Yeah, Chris, what are the current thresholds, and I'm assuming there aren't any, and in which case is there some considerable ambiguity as to who owes taxes and who doesn't?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's correct. The issue of nexus is not, there isn't a clear test. It's kind of on a case-by-case basis. There is ambiguity in the law, so it's not clear to the Department of Revenue or to a business that they absolutely have nexus in the state. So there is a case to be made in either way, and I think we'll hear some testimony from the department on the implications of some of that ambiguity. And one of the purposes of the bill is to establish that bright line, which just makes it clear to all parties involved, the Department of Revenue as well as the business community, that they, a given business would be taxable or would not be taxable by the state.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's been my experience that when there's ambiguity in the law, the only people that come out ahead are the lawyers.
Very quick today, Monroe.
Had my run.
Had its run early in the morning. Good weather for a run. Well, Nexus is the hardest. Deborah, to me, this is always the area that I don't know if you can ever get there in terms of real clarity on Nexus for companies.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. An excellent observation. It is a difficult concept and even more difficult to explain, but I will give it a try here. As some background on the development of this, the Multi-State Tax Commission work group worked for some time and came up with this partly in response to efforts in the business community to have Congress develop a standard to be used by the states as to when a company had nexus in a particular state. So they were looking for some federal limitations on the ability of states to tax businesses. In response to that, this proposal was developed, and again, it does establish a bright line test, which currently does not exist in Oregon law. It is a facts and circumstances test as to whether or not a company has enough connection with Oregon that Oregon can assert a tax on the company that's presumably doing business here. That's the question. Are they doing business in Oregon or not? So if you send a person into Oregon to a trade show, for example, and they're here for 3 days, that person's being compensated, presumably, by the company, and they're performing services for the company. Is that enough to establish nexus so that Oregon could assert that business owes tax to Oregon? I attended the conference of the State and Local Tax Commission, the State and Local Tax Conference of the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants early this month, and one of the situations they described and warned their clients about is what happens when a business has an employee who's teleworking. If you have an Oregon business in Ontario and the person lives in Nampa and you let them work for 4 days of the week in Idaho, mm-hmm. does Idaho then have jurisdiction to impose a tax on that Oregon corporation, even if that's their only connection with Oregon, or with Idaho, rather? So what came out of that work group and what was adopted by the Multi-State Tax Commission is this bright line standard, and that is if a company has at least $50,000 of property or payroll in Oregon, or if they have $500,000 of sales in Oregon, they would have nexus with Oregon. Oregon would have jurisdiction to tax the company. If none of those are met, but at least 25% of total property, total payroll, or total sales are in Oregon, the company would have nexus. And that last provision is designed to address those small border companies that may be headquartered in Idaho, that's where their plant is, but they have $250,000 of sales in Oregon, only $400,000 total. Then that company would be subject to Oregon tax. So again, the standard, we look at it as being very clean and very clear, easily understood by both the department and businesses. They would be using existing information that they're already collecting, so it shouldn't be burdensome for them to determine this. As staff pointed out, if they're below the threshold, they don't even have a filing requirement to show they're not subject to nexus, so there's that cost savings to the companies. And again, it would, we think, provide a good bright line that both the state and the businesses could use. Ohio has adopted this standard. I understand that several other states are working on it. I believe New Mexico had a blue ribbon panel on tax reform that recommended the standard be adopted. I don't know where they are in the process. But that is the background on it. And then also I have attached, starting on page 2, the uniform language itself. And I'd be happy to try to answer questions, Mr. Chair.
Great. Questions. Senator Starr.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Buchanan, for being here this morning. Where did the numbers come from? Where did $50,000 come from? Why isn't it $100,000 or why isn't it $25,000? Can you illuminate, or is it just, you know, they kind of picked something that was kind of in the middle of a range? Or can you talk to me a little bit about, is there an average small business or...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, I honestly don't have the details on that, but I can try to find that out and get that information for you.
And then follow up, Mr. Chairman. As I read the language in the bill, I think there may be some ambiguity left in the bill, and maybe I'm just reading it wrong. But as you look at on page 3, line 12 and 13, wouldn't it be clearer if at the end of line 12, you added another or, so it was clear that you had to, it didn't include both, unless you meant this, property of $50,000 and payroll of $50,000? Do you have to have both of those?
No. So you're saying an or.
It's grammatically correct the way it is. It's or, it's one or the other or the other.
Yeah, but there's not another or.
I know, but trust me, it's grammatically correct.
The property of the taxpayer exceeds $50,000.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, I think legislative counsel would agree, although I shouldn't speak for them, but the semicolon at the end of the first phrase works as a substitute for the word or.
Okay.
So our interpretation would be that the property of the taxpayer in this state exceeds $50,000, or the payroll of the taxpayer in this state exceeds $50,000, or the sales of the taxpayer in this state exceeds
$500,000. And just to continue to follow up on the same kind of issue, on the next paragraph, you have one or, and you don't have an or between 25% of property. You have a comma, 25% of payroll. And then you have the or 25% of sales. I just want to make it clear what the intent is for the record.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Hold on 1 second. Let's get the, if we could, let's.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, my reading is that a business, an outside business, has nexus with Oregon if at least 25% of its property or 25% of its payroll, or 25% of its sales is in this state.
And my thought, Mr. Chair, wouldn't it be clearer if the or was actually printed in the page rather than just a comma?
I kind of agree. I just don't know, and this is kind of grammatical, but it has a huge implications, is why put the or in the first place if a semicolon stands for or one time, but then the second...
No, it's a series. Grammatically, anytime you're doing a series, the horse is either brown, black, red, or orange.
Green. Yeah.
It's just a grammatical series.
Right.
And it's correct here.
Okay.
It's like
just for clarity, we don't want anything about horses in the in this.
It's like on that
Morning Barbaro.
The game show, you know. Do you want door one, door two, or door three? And that's exactly the way these read.
So you can't do without the or.
You got to have the or somewhere.
You got to have the or, but you don't have to have it.
You only need one or.
So Chris is getting this.
If there's any question, it's all on the record here.
For the record.
we beat this horse to a...
What happens when you have an old high school teacher on your committee?
Or an old news editor.
Or an old news editor, right.
Senator Monroe, did you have...
What was it? I wanted to know. You said the state of Ohio has already adopted this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, that's my understanding.
With these exact same standards? Limitations? 50, 50, and 500?
That is my understanding.
And the other states that are anticipating this are all using these standards?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, I assume that they are using the standards, but that would be the purpose of having a uniform proposal, is that all of the states are on board with the same standards, so it's clear and you don't have that jumble of jurisdictional requirements among the states.
And you said that these standards would grow over time?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe, there is a provision on page 3 for adjusting the amounts based on inflation.
Okay. It's very important, you know, if we're going to do this, that I think it be consistent with what other states are doing. And so the inflationary adjustment, you know, is a little bit troubling because different states might use a different, you know, a different inflation is not the same all over the country, and you know, having been involved in negotiating a number of contracts for school employees and teachers and so on, what index do you use, and are all states going to use the same index so we all stay uniform, I guess is the point I'm trying to make.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe, the uniform language, I believe, has
API
language that may be just a bit different than what is in Senate Bill 177. On page 2 of the handout that I provided to you, they are using the consumer price index for all urban consumers. Ours is the same, but I seem to recall that we had a slightly different time period for making the adjustment. Although perhaps it is the same.
Looks like it's a U.S.
It's using the Department of Labor.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
It does seem to be the same.
Okay, thank you.
One other question, Mr. Cannon. So the date on the multi-state report is the 17th of October, 2002. And my understanding is only Ohio has enacted, and Oregon, perhaps, say we would be number 2. So the great thing about the multi-state tax commission is maybe getting uniformity across the states. Like I said, the concern would be that it's been 4 or 5 years and only one state has adopted what looks like the model language that the commission hammered out.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there is a fairly complicated process that the commission goes through to adopt its uniformity proposals. It sends them out to the states for comments. The states make comments on them. They continue to work on that. Whether this date is the final date that it was sent out to the states as a uniformity proposal, I'm not sure. But then it also takes time for the states to consider whether or not it's going to work with their system and whether it's a good idea. The same with the department in developing these proposals. We look at them and say, how does this fit in with everything else that's happening? But I can certainly ask as to where other states are with this particular proposal.
In terms of the dates.
Right.
It would just, yeah, I think that. And the other, when the tax commission comes up with, okay, here is our uniform position, are there groups that they... customer groups, whether it be citizen business, that then they go out and present that to before they put the final stamp, or are they just incorporated into the process?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a very interactive process that they make a proposal, they get comments back not only from state administrative agencies, but also from businesses, and get their input as to how this will work and what they think of it. So it is a very public process.
It is. Okay. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for perfectly asking the questions that I have. But I do want to tie the questions that the chair just asked with back to Senator Starr's question. And that is, if it is October of 2002, shouldn't we be adjusting these things for inflation before we pass it? So that because I would imagine that everyone would think that it would be uniform based upon that date, adding inflation in, and then starting off with whatever number that is.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, perhaps it would be good to have legislative counsel weigh in on it. If I look at page 3 of the bill and line 24 does have the date January 1, 2003. So if this were enacted, then it appears that the amounts would be adjusted based on inflation since January 1, 2003.
Yes, Senator Starr.
Thank you. Has the department had input from the business community that there's a problem here? I mean, I've been in this building now for almost a month, and I haven't had the business community. I think that this is focused here, knocking on my door, saying we really have a problem with our state revenue code because we don't know whether we really have to pay taxes in Oregon or not, because the nexus issues are so unclear. So has the department reached out to some of the business organizations and talked about this issue with them? They certainly haven't come to me saying this is a problem we need to have fixed. And if only one state has adopted this standard, I'm not sure that really makes sense, in light of all the good work that the Multi-State Tax Commission has made anyway.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, the businesses that are in Oregon aren't going to be impacted by this. If Oregon adopts the standards, it has no impact for them because they are here and they have nexus with Oregon. This doesn't change anything for them. Where they might be impacted is if California were to adopt these same standards. That would provide the Oregon businesses with a clear, bright-line test as to what they can do in California before they become subject to California tax. So if businesses had concern, the ones you might be hearing from would be the out-of-state businesses that are maybe have a small presence in Oregon now. We have, in developing our concepts, we do take them out to the Society of Certified Public Accountants. We run them by them. We also take them to a work group of the Oregon State Bar and present them to those groups. As I recall, they did not raise any serious concerns about this proposal.
Well, Mr. Chair, there are a lot of companies that aren't necessarily based in Oregon that do business in Oregon that are part of the Oregon business community. And so, I mean, it seems to me that it's not, I don't know, I just, whether this is something that's really a problem that we need to be fixing. That's just some comments.
The nexus question is just the hardest. Like the trades show example, I don't know how do you identify that individual other than voluntary compliance? How do you identify that the individual was here for 4 days at the Expo Center in Medford representing his company and then now is back in Sacramento, for example?
Mr. Chair, one way would be to attend the trade show and see who's there, what businesses are represented.
Do we do that? Do we have department agents go to a trade show and write down?
Mr. Chair, I believe some states do. I don't know about Oregon specifically, but I do know that some in California, I have heard that representatives, employees of the California Taxing Agency will attend trade shows to see which companies are represented there, how long they are there, what the employees are doing, and follow up to say, you had a presence in our state. So.
Mr. Chair, it really might be helpful on this bill if we could hear from a representative of the accountants, of the certified public accountants. They're the ones that help prepare the taxes, and they might be able to enlighten us as to whether there is a problem that we need to fix and if this is an appropriate fix.
Great. That's a good suggestion. Can you go find – I saw Rob Douglas. Do you know what Rob Tim, I was going to call you. You're up next. But I saw Rob wandering, and this is a great chance to just nab him and make him testify on something he had no idea was coming.
But the one person that was signed up to testify just left. Deborah. Thank you.
Looks like there's another anxious body in the back row.
All right, do you want to fill time? Now, Cosgrove, you could have got up and found Rob, and then we could have had... I just want to have...
I was intending, Mr. Chairman, to sit up here with Mr. Martinez, so I was going to be the second chair.
You were going to play the role of whispering into his ear, and you don't have to answer that question. all right, let's go. Rob Douglas, you were requested, Mr. Douglas, unfairly in some ways. If you want some time, we're not going to move this bill today, but... The question was posed where the CPAs would be. We're looking at a bill just trying to come into uniformity with the Multi-State Tax Commission on nexus questions.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Rob Douglas, representing the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. Is this 177? Or?
It is 177.
The chart I have indicates the State Society has not taken a position on that bill yet, but I'll be happy to recontact them and get back to the committee.
Great. And if when we reschedule it, if they, it would be helpful to have if they could send a representative, if that's something they would wish to do. I think it'd be helpful for us to hear their perspective on this one.
We'll do our best.
Thank you. So this is Rob Douglas. If in the future we need to go hunt him down, that is him. Tim Martinez, Paul Cosgrove, and...
I'm Tom Pickles, Mr. Chair.
Tom, if you want to, you can.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association. And for Senator Monroe, I am neither a lawyer nor an economist. So I don't know where that puts me in the rankings. This, you know, appears, at least on its face and in the proponent's testimony, is just kind of a minor little bill to kind of get us in conformance with the multi-state tax corporation. Commission. I can tell you, however, that after spending an hour on the phone with major bank tax professionals, it is anything but that. This is a very, very concerning bill to the Oregon Bankers Association. I will prepare for you, it sounds like you don't have it yet, but we will prepare for you kind of a chart of what other states have done. I can tell you briefly that in just a brief review, there have been over at least 15 states that have done something in this area recently. And of those 15 states, seven, ultimately, their Supreme Court declared it unconstitutional. Eight of them declared it constitutional. So you can see, as the chair said, nexus is a very interesting issue. What we really need to be talking about here is economic nexus. That's the point of this bill. We would probably argue with the department that they may indeed already have what they need on the property and payroll side. Because if I understood our conversation yesterday on our conference call, you know, once you have some payroll and you have property in the state, you are paying taxes. So really we're talking about the sales piece. And the example that I would give you is from banking is if one of the banks may have a credit card subsidiary. May not have any branches in this state, but may have thousands of customers that that carry their card. Currently, depending on where that card is issued, the financial institution may be paying taxes in that state. So this is giving the state of Oregon a second bite at something that already may be paying taxes on in a different location. And I think that's why this is such a complicated issue in trying to figure it out. I can also tell you on the legal side that there are at least two cases that are working their way up to the Supreme Court of the United States. And it would be our recommendation that the committee go very slow on this. Let's see what the court decides. Obviously, the folks I represent believe that the court will say it's unconstitutional. The Multi-State Tax Commission, not surprising, believes it will be found constitutional. But the point of it is we will know that, I think, within the next, I would say, couple of years. you know, it's hard to predict the Supreme Court.
You're going to say a couple of months.
Well,
more
I don't
relevant
know, you know,
for
I
us here.
Know, Mr. Cosgrove has more current information than I do on that, but it's my understanding that the appeals court for West Virginia has already ruled on the case, and it is now on its way to the Supreme Court and is expected to be heard. So I would defer to Paul if he has any additional information. But again, we would encourage the committee and urge the committee to go very slow on this. It will have a dramatic impact on businesses that are doing business in Oregon, that have payroll, that have employees, that have property. So,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Burdick.
Thank you. You've already said you're not a lawyer, but the seven states that you mentioned that had found it unconstitutional, what grounds were those? Was it the same in all seven states?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, that's the part of the thing I want to put together in the chart for you is what the issues were. I don't have that here.
Issues,
today.
Different constitutional issues in different states?
That's my understanding,
okay.
Senator.
So, Tim, it would also be helpful, the double bite question I think is definitely relevant if you have a visa issue or that I'd like to know from the department, if that. But also, I guess the big question would be, just in terms of fairness, why not have, and like I said, we're not moving this bill today, but why not have some standard of sales in place? I think that'd be important for the committee to know if we... when we come back to this issue of why wouldn't we as a state?
Okay. Well, again, Mr. Chair, I think the question is if the in this example, if the issuer is paying state tax based on that income in the state in which it is issued, and is also presumably paying federal tax, then you're kind of taking another bite out of that particular corporation's taxes.
So they've already paid tax. Say it's a bank in San Francisco, they've already paid their California income tax on the sale. I know this is premature because you're going to work.
Right.
But then your concern would be that then they would be charged income tax on the Oregon sale of the same item.
Correct.
Mr. Cosgrove.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Cosgrove, representing the Oregon Financial Services Association, and amongst our members, in addition to some locally based companies that have some multi-state operations, we also have, as members, subsidiaries of some of the country's major banks. And some of those subsidiaries of the country's major banks have major presence in Oregon. I'm sitting next to Tom Eccles from HSBC. We have HSBC has loan offices across the state and a major credit card operation in Tigard. So it has nexus for the purpose of paying taxes for its operations in Oregon and does pay taxes for its operations in Oregon. But it also has the kind of operations, as do other members, like Mr. Martinez mentioned, that are in other states that would be brought in and taxed by Oregon in addition to what Oregon already taxes. We, too, will be gathering some data, and I just know that I've heard enough from one member that the kind of impact on their bottom line of this bill in Oregon would be roughly $1 million. So I don't know where the estimates of fiscal impact are. I can't imagine that we're on the same page in terms of viewing what the impact would be. But that, I think, gives you at least a magnitude, and we'll try to get that more accurate and identified before this bill comes back to you. But that gives you an idea of the magnitude of the concern of the financial services industry regarding this bill.
Thank you.
I'd be happy to answer any questions if I can.
Mr. Eccles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I am Tom Eccles, Regional Director of Government Relations for HSBC North America. I'm based in Olympia, Washington. HSBC is a very large employer in the state of Oregon. We've got around 1,200 or 1,300 employees in Tigard and then a couple of hundred more around the state. And I regret and I want to apologize, Mr. Chair, I didn't come prepared to testify on this bill. I came really to just investigate and see what was going on. I promise if you hear it again, I will have detailed, specific testimony as to our concerns. It's just that our initial reading of this bill was that it would be a substantial impact in increased taxes to our company bottom line, and that's just what I wanted, the message I want to deliver. And I will, again, provide as much detail as the committee requests of me, and I'll work with you to shape the good policy that you need.
Great. Well, thanks for coming down this morning. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Appreciate the testimony. So we'll learn more about Senate Bill 177. Anyone else? Senate Bill 177? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Douglas, for being close by. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 177, and that wraps us up for this morning. We're adjourned.